heavy door slams after two men walk through it into an interrogation room. They both sit down. One man explains the use of cameras and microphones before he reads him his rights while handing him a cup of coffee. A series of questions is asked and calmly answered. There's a change of pace. A list of evidence is presented against the one man. There's a long pause.
From this intersection on the side of the road.
And what road is that, Carrie?
You know,
south of, can't read that word, East Hungerford?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Oh, there it is there. Okay.
There.
How far off the road is she?
40 feet.
Is she is she covered with anything?
She's wrapped up.
In
she's
what?
On the surface.
Welcome to the fourth episode of Canadian Killers. This podcast will go over the crimes, investigation, and trial of known Canadian serial killers. Before we get started, I must mention, this podcast will contain the topics of substance abuse, violence, sexual assault, and use explicit language. It is not suitable for younger audiences. I think the best place to start off the story is in 1982. David Russell Williams began attending the University of Toronto in Scarborough. There, he quickly gained the nickname of Drill Sergeant, or Sarge for short. As one of his old roommates and close friends said, he began assigning his roommates chores immediately once arriving. He was also known as the prankster around campus. Williams was pretty stealthy. He was able to unlock doors, then hide in his friends' and roommates' closets for hours and jump out to scare them. Williams' closest friends didn't know much about him. He was a child of divorce and attended boarding school when he was younger. He hardly spoke to his family and spoke about them even less. Now, even though Williams studied economics, after he watched Top Gun, he was inspired to become a pilot, and he did so after he graduated, and off his career went. Williams zoomed through the ranks. He became one of Canada's top pilots, and though he didn't fly any fighter planes, he did fly transport planes to war zones, natural disasters, and jet planes carrying prime ministers and other VIPs across Canada and the world. Williams was only known to have one girlfriend during college, and when they broke up, it became a topic that was off limits. He didn't date again for almost another 10 years. When he married, according to his best friend Jeff Farquhar, it was very sudden and random. He didn't tell anybody about his upcoming marriage. Marrying Mary Elizabeth meant their relationship would be fairly long distance, especially once William was sworn in as wing commander at CFB Trenton. Trenton is Canada's busiest air transport base and place of support for overseas military operations. His wife Mary would stay at a home they had in Ottawa, while William stayed at a cottage they owned in Tweed. Williams owned the cottage long before he made it his part-time residence. His neighbor, Larry Jones, said he was often alone. It was on the rarest occasion he would bring company with him, and he'd be there on and off, coming and going at all hours. Around this time, break-ins around Williams' neighborhood began to happen. These break-ins were extremely odd. Nothing that would be normally seen as value was ever taken, but what would get stolen was women's underwear, lingerie, sex toys, and photographs of the women who lived in the household. What's even more weird is the exact same series of robberies began to happen in Ottawa, with 34 similar break-ins and attempted break-ins, and the theft of hundreds of intimate female garments. But no one seemed to be able to connect the dots. Maybe because the crime scenes were 2 hours away from another, or maybe because the perpetrator was above suspicion. But like I said, Williams made his cottage his part-time residence in 2009, and that's when the chaos began. On September 17th, a young mother went to sleep beside her 8-week-old baby. Around 1 a.m., she was awoken by a strange man standing at the edge of her bed. The man sexually assaulted her, taking photos before he fled the scene at about 3 a.m. The next night, another break-in that went undetected at the time happened at the same house the sexual assault had taken place. And the next week, a third break-in at the scene of the sexual assault. Towards the end of September, there were three break-ins at the same house near William's cottage. And on the third break-in, another sexual assault took place. A woman was home alone when a strange man broke in. He then blindfolded her, tied her up, cut off her clothes with a knife, beat her, and sexually assaulted her. While this horrific event took place, the woman asked if the man was going to kill her, to which he replied he had no need to. When he spoke, the woman swore she recognized his voice, but couldn't identify where from. With the second sexual assault, police began to amp up their investigation, and they were so close. Remember Larry Jones, Russell Williams' neighbor? He became a suspect for the robberies and sexual assaults. The woman who thought she recognized her abuser's voice mistaked it for Jones. According to Jones, it took a 3.5-hour interrogation, fingerprints, DNA, and 3-hour polygraph, and weeks of follow-up for police to realize he wasn't their man. During this time, the violence only worsened. 38-year-old corporal at CFP Trenton, who lived in Bridgerton, Ontario, Marie-France Como, was killed. She was described as a free, curious, and adventurous spirit. On November 25th, her body was found in her house. The cause of death was lack of oxygen. At first, they thought it to be a suicide, but with further investigation, it was found to be murder. When word was sent to Trenton about Como's death, William wrote a letter to Como's family, even saying, "Please, let me know whether there's anything I can do to help you during this difficult time." Then he carried on his life like normal, participating in events like the Olympic torch relay, holiday parties, even consulting a relief operation. But most important, he was making the effort to travel back and forth between Tweed and Ottawa to visit his wife. Whenever the colonel would drive from CFB Trenton to his cottage in Tweed, he would drive right past the house where a 27-year-old woman lived on her own. Her name, Jessica Lloyd. Lloyd was described as friendly, witty, outgoing, and funny. One morning, around 3 a.m. to be specific, two men drove south on Highway 37, headed to Bellevue to pick up a load in their truck, and they went past Lloyd's place. The man in the passenger seat saw an SUV parked in the field a distance from the road and the nearest house. They both thought it was odd, but kept driving. The next day, Lloyd was missing. She didn't show up to work, and when her brother went to check her house, she wasn't there, but her cell phone, purse, and ID was. She was quickly reported a missing person, and the search began. Pictures of her were plastered everywhere. A massive search with a police helicopter began. Even the S&R team from CFB Trenton assisted in trying to find her. When the two men came back from their trucking job, they saw the missing posters and the police vehicles around the house on Highway 37 and put two and two together. They went to the police and told them they saw an SUV in the field that night. When OPP went to the field, the tire's tracks had been preserved by the cold. Using that information, they set up roadblocks checking the tires on Highway 37. A week to the day after Lloyd went missing, a car with the wheels that matched the tracks was stopped. It was Williams. They let him go, but kept police surveillance on him from then on. On February 7th, Wilson was at his Ottawa home when OPP called him, asking him to go to the Ottawa Police Department to answer some questions. The interrogation started off smoothly. The officer explained what was happening, read Williams his rights, even offered him a cup of coffee before beginning the interview. Williams seemed extremely comfortable as the officer questioned him on his weekly routines, his job at the base, what the last time he got his tires changed was, and more. Once he finished answering the questions, the officer presented Williams with the evidence they had collected, like the tire tracks, a footprint they had found at the back of Lloyd's house that matched his, and how close the break-ins were to his house, etc. At first, William denied, but the officer pushed. A long pause before William spoke. He said his concern was his wife and the impact this was going to have on the Canadian Air Force. The officer and him go back and forth before William confesses.
Some in the camera bag, which they would have found in my office. Mm-hmm. And in the when you walk into the office on the left side, there's a desk of drawers. Set of drawers. Like a filing cabinet. Wooden, IKEA. In one of the top two drawers, and there's a plastic divider.
Yeah.
And there's, inside there, there are two memory cards.
Okay.
Which are blank, but I'm sure they can be re...
And whose images are on those cards?
Well, I've erased them, but I expect you'll be able to draw images of Jessica and I.
What about Marie?
There may be images on there as well.
And the two women from September?
Yep.
Okay.
He shows the officer where the body can be found before he explains what happened to her. He saw her in her house running on her treadmill as he was driving by one day. He saw that she wasn't in her home on that Thursday and broke in, roaming around before leaving. As he was leaving, he noticed she came back in. So, he went back inside while she was sleeping through the back door. He woke her up and claims he only hit her once. He raped her in her house, then forced her into his car and took her to Tweed. He spent the day in Tweed before killing her. She thought they were leaving, and he hit her on the back of the head with a flashlight, knocking her out before strangling her. Then he described how he murdered Como. He'd only met her once, but that was enough. One night, he broke into her house through an open basement window. She wasn't home at the time, so he just looked around her house and left. Later, he broke in a second time when she was home. Her cat had come into the basement and discovered him. Como began calling for her cat, and when it didn't come upstairs, she went down to get it. That's when she saw Williams. Before she could react, Williams launched at her, knocking her out with the flashlight. He tied her up, brought her upstairs, and suffocated her in the morning. When asked why he killed them, he said two lived and two died, and they knew that photos had been taken, so he couldn't have the stories of photos being taken, or people would have been able to connect the dots sooner or later. He was also asked what his motive was. Williams simply replied that he couldn't give an answer. And then he said, and I quote, "I'm pretty sure answers don't matter anyways." Williams was arrested and Lloyd's body was retrieved at Carey's Road. Boxes upon boxes with women's photos and intimate and personal items were found in Williams' basement at his Ottawa home. And on April 4th, 2010, Williams was placed under suicide watch after an apparent suicide attempt. David Russell Williams was charged with two first-degree murders, sexual assault, along with 82 more offenses, including breaking and entering, theft, attempted breaking and entering, and breaking and entering with an intent to commit an indictable offense. He pleaded guilty on October 18th, and he was sentenced on October 21st to two life sentences in prison with no chance of parole for 25 years for the first-degree murders. He was also sentenced to 10 years for each of the two sexual assaults, as well as 1 year for each of the other charges he faced. Now, I must note, a serial killer is a person who commits a series of murder, often with no clear motive and typically following a characteristic, predictable behavior and pattern, usually killing three or more people. Now, the colonel only killed two of his victims, but the rest of the definition remains true, and most experts think if he hadn't been stopped when he did, the pattern would have continued. Williams was revoked of his commission and later his medals, and was expelled from the Canadian Air Force for service misconduct. But from the records I could find, Williams still does collect $60,000 in an annual military pension, and in May 2010, he and his wife also split their real estate holdings, leaving Williams the sole owner of their cottage in Tweed and his wife the sole owner of their home in Ottawa. Nevertheless, David Russell Williams will likely spend the rest of his life in prison, ending the control of the colonel. The information for this podcast was brought by court transcripts, CBC coverage of Russell Williams, and other news coverage of the trial of Russell Williams.